You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, here for another Tuesday episode with our Tuesday guest, and that is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, this is a Ravens podcast, but I can't start the show without talking about Trey Mancini, such an inspiration for Baltimore after a very impressive home run derby performance coming in second to the pretty much invincible Pete Alonso. How are you doing today?
Doing bad. I'm down bad. That was a Mickey Mouse home run derby championship. I think that was the greatest baseball scandal of the 21st century, including Barry Bonds, including Jose Altuve and the Astros, including the doxed balls of 2 years ago, and also including the foreign substances. Pete Alonso, certified bad boy, bad guy, bad person maybe, struck down on a kid, bought himself an extra minute of rest, and then stole the crown away from Trey Mancini, and thus it is qualified as a Mickey Mouse home run derby championship. I think that it should have gone into a three swing off, and let's see what happens. He also had the greatest, Pete Alonso had the greatest pitching coach throwing him absolute Swedish meatballs to destroy out of the ballpark. But hey, it was really fun to watch. Trey Mancini put on a show. Pete Alonso put on a show. It was great for baseball. I got to get myself to one of those. That's the pinnacle of baseball to me, is the home run derby. I just love it. My birthday, July 10th, is right around there. And sometimes it's on my birthday, and I'm sad that I've never gone to one, but I will change that in the near future.
Yes, absolutely. You should. And I'd like to go to one as well. I mean, that all the all-star games, you know, I know the Pro Bowl in the NFL has kind of been looked down upon in recent years, but yeah, the home run derby last night was absolutely incredible. And a big shout out to Trey Mancini for doing what he did and really providing such an inspiration for so many people. But Spencer, getting into Ravens talk today, I want to talk to you a bit about what the Ravens have done in the offseason. Obviously, it's been a pretty big talking point, but I want to do it from a bit of a different perspective, and that is comparing what the Ravens have now and what they have done to the units at certain positions that the Ravens have had in 2020 or even going back a couple more years, 2019, whatever. So starting off on the offensive side of the ball, Spencer, obviously I think where the Ravens made a ton of improvement was at the wide receiver position. They got Lamar Jackson some weapons, but also they're bringing in a lot of tight ends as well to compete for what presumably will be the third tight end spot, something Baltimore really didn't utilize in 2020. Now, looking back at wide receiver units, for example, from 2019, you know, there were some names, some big names, but also Lamar Jackson arguably didn't have a lot. So when comparing what the Ravens have now in 2021 at both wide receiver and tight end surrounding Lamar Jackson, how does that compare to you as to what they've had in more recent years? And are you impressed with what they've done?
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of pass catchers and, you know, of course, blocking is imperative, even for the receivers in the Ravens offense. But going back to 2019, you had a rookie, Marquise Brown, who didn't even get to participate in preseason. He was so fresh off of his Lisfranc injury. You had Miles Boykin, Willie Snead, Seth Roberts was brought in. And then, Chris Moore. I'm looking back into a depth chart that was published in August, and they had Jordan Lasley on there. So looking back to 2019, it was pretty sparse. And then going towards 2020, obviously, Willie Snead, Miles Boykin, they added Devin Duvernay. They added James Prochet as well. And, you know, Hollywood Brown, all those guys. So a little bit of improvement there. It felt like there was a little more competition. You like the addition of Duvernay and, I'm going against the grain. I felt that Seth Roberts was a really key contributor at times for the Ravens. I think he had picked up first downs on about 18 of his 21 receptions on the season. He did end up dropping a pass in that completely jinxed Titans loss where the Ravens just were, you know, bad luck Charlie, just shooting themselves in the foot left and right. He did have that drop, but throughout the season, you know, he picked up a lot of first downs, worked well with Lamar on third down, was able to run some routes at some really professional angles. I think of that big touchdown against the Jets on Thursday night as well. So, not like anyone was going, oh, where's Seth Roberts? The Ravens are screwed. But at the same time, a little bit of veteran presence that felt kind of confident at times. And then last year, he's gone and you end up not really feeling the connection with anyone aside from Marquise Brown. And then, of course, Mark Andrews and You know, at times, you know, Devin Duvernay made a couple plays, you know, down the field against Pittsburgh and on some screens. He was the Ravens' most targeted screen receiver last year. And, you know, Miles Boykin came on strong a little bit at the end of the season and had a good game against the Cowboys, a big touchdown catch against the Bengals, and made some plays, blocked his tail off. But finally, bringing us to 2021, Sammy Watkins, you know, my original thoughts when the Ravens brought Sammy Watkins in was he can't be the only move that you make. You can't say, okay, we'll go draft a, you know, fifth round receiver and we'll bring in Sammy Watkins and that'll be what you do. You needed to overcompensate a little bit. It hurt to miss out on the Corey Davises of the world and some of those other receivers, you know, the Ravens, interestingly enough, which seems like such a strange move in retrospect, going after Juju Smith-Schuster, who does not play well on the outside. He does not separate well, but he is a good target over the middle of the field. But again, would have just factored more into the slot, into a little bit more of a logjam where Marquise Brown plays really well out of the slot. Mark Andrews plays a ton out of the slot. You've got Devin Duvernay. You've got James Prochet. You know, there's a litany of receivers. Basically, everybody but Miles Boykin on your roster plays a good bit out of the slot at some points. And it was interesting that Juju is who they pursued very heavily. They end up falling short of Juju Smith-Schuster and ended up bringing in Sammy Watkins, who I think can still be very physical. He can release well. He's strong. He's a big catch radius. You know, loses concentration a little bit at times, has some wacky reps, and had some Patrick Mahomes throws from some crazy arm angles and some crazy arm slots, and can be off base a little bit. And sometimes their rhythm was a little bit distraught. But you go back to Super Bowl, not this past one, the one before, where Watkins was healthy and absolutely torched Richard Sherman. And I was able to make some plays. So it feels like you lose Willie Snead, who was a slot-only contributor for the most part. And then you are going to let Devin Duvernay have a bigger role. You're probably going to have Marquise Brown in the slot a little bit more. And, of course, you know, maybe James Prochet. And then, oh, behold, you end up bringing in Rashad Bateman, who can also play the slot, but focuses outside primarily. So now suddenly you've got Bateman, Watkins, and Boykin, who are three, you know, bigger bodies in different ways who can make plays from the outside. So ultimately, three different guys who can switch up, be different body types, and provide more of a threat on the outside. So I like where they're at very much so at this point. You factor in the tight ends that they brought in, and they're just kind of going with a, hey, we're going to have a bunch of different body types. You think of Eli Wolf, a guy who they've talked very highly of. You think of Josh Oliver, who's maybe the closest body type to Mark Andrews on the Ravens roster. You know, heaven forbid something is to happen to Mark Andrews. You're able to get Oliver in there, someone who can maybe threaten vertically and present some speed up the seam a little bit. Of course, Eric Tomlinson, who they were comfortable with in a blocking role. And they've got a litany of names in there now behind Boyle and behind Mark Andrews as well. So Ben Mason is definitely going to factor into that as well. A guy who's not going to get cut, you know, definitely, definitely not when you're picking in that fifth round. And as we've talked about on the show, Kevin, you know, the Ravens don't cut picks. They don't cut seventh round picks. They don't cut anything at all. Very, very, very rarely. I think there's been like two in the last decade. You and I went over it before. I can't fully recall, but it's not a lot of guys. So ultimately, Ben Mason will be a factor as well. Pat Ricard plays some tight end, some fullback, some H, you know, whatever you want to call it, some wing, some ace wing, and wears a ton of different hats. So the Ravens have a ton of depth and opportunity to figure it out. You know, preseason is going to be huge in determining who they're comfortable with in that tight end role. And this is, I think Marlon Humphrey said it best. You know, the Ravens the last couple of years, in Humphrey's words, essentially haven't really had more than two or three guys in the receiver room that are really giving the corners a test. And from what he describes through OTAs and minicamp and all that good stuff, it feels like there's five, six, seven guys now who are testing these corners. The addition of Tylan Wallace as well, who I didn't mention, who feels like one of the steals of the draft in terms of ability. You know, his medicals weren't great, and I don't think he had an outstanding pro day, but a guy who showed savvy at the Senior Bowl. He showed the ability to get open, to work from the slot, to work on the outside, to make contested catches, to run after the catch, make plays on special teams, all that good stuff. So suddenly, you know, there is a logjam at receiver, whereas it was previously at points Jordan Lasley and Chris Moore. Now suddenly it's kind of like James Prochet, it feels like Lamar likes and the Ravens like, and they trusted him to return. And he was, you know, looked sharp in the few routes that he did run. Boykin, a guy who's played, you know, 40, 50% of snaps the last couple of years. and guys like Tylan Wallace. So there's guys chomping at the bit for those last couple of receiver spots, and one of them is likely not going to make it or end up on an IR stash. So I think it's thinking about it from Marlon Humphrey's perspective, it's even better for the defense to be going against these guys in practice every day. When you practice against, you know, guys that aren't pushing you, it's a little bit different. And when you're getting different looks from different body types, suddenly they've got these bigger, more physical receivers. Watkins, a veteran, Bateman, a very sudden, smooth, you know, sharp route runner. I guess smooth and sharp don't go together well, but somehow he makes that work. And ultimately it's going to be something that helps the Ravens in a multitude of different ways, even at practice, even helping their defense. So on that side of the ball, you know, on what they've done in the receiver room, and then you factor in coach-wise, suddenly you have T. Martin and Keith Williams tag teaming what was a one-man role in David Culley being the receivers coach and the pass game coordinator. So it's allocating your coaching resources more. More resources are being allocated in order to improve that passing game. So the Ravens have identified, you know, maybe this is the area that is holding us back as an organization from going to where we want to, from getting a deeper postseason run, from attacking the conference championship and going to a Super Bowl. So if they have that perspective on themselves, then it's smart because, hey, harmony, balance, and depth, that's, you know, and a little bit of help from the injury bug staying away from you. Those are the things that get you to a Super Bowl. And this room is also much more experienced now. It feels like Hollywood Brown is a wealth of experience playing in several playoff games, and Sammy Watkins has a ton of experience. And at this point, they'll be good to go. Mark Andrews, a ton of experience as well. Some guys have been in the system for a few years now, and I think it's ultimately going to help the Ravens. And I mean, a guy like Devin Duvernay feels like almost an afterthought when he's a playmaker. So hopefully they're able to figure it out and stay healthy, but I'm confident in that group to be the best Ravens receiving core in, you know, quite some time, dating maybe all the way back to the Super Bowl that they won against the 49ers.
Yeah, depth is the most important part there. I think the Ravens have a ton of it at wide receiver and also tight end as well. We're going to see how these battles play out. Obviously, the one battle with Boykin and Prochet seemingly, and also the third tight end battle as well. But Spencer, another area where the Ravens pretty much revamped a lot of their unit was at the offensive line position. They're obviously getting back Ronnie Stanley, and they added a lot of guys like Kevin Zeitler, Alejandro Villanueva, Ben Cleveland. The offensive line in Baltimore, it seems like it's been kind of up and down recently. In 2019, the unit was really, really good, although it did struggle to an extent in the playoffs that year. But in 2020, it just seemed like there were revolving doors at almost every position. And the Ravens made sure this offseason that that would not happen again. So Spencer, compared to previous years, how does the Ravens offensive line look to you for this upcoming season?
Well, you go back to 2019, and that unit featured Orlando Brown, Marshall Yanda, and Ronnie Stanley. It was a strong, strong, strong group with three very talented individuals. However, you know, Matt Skura goes down, Patrick McCary steps in, fills in admirably, you know, through a couple of regular season games. Then it does get hyper-focused on that Tennessee Titans loss. But hey, they were outmatched. They were outcoached. It was not their night on both sides of the ball. So you can blame that one game all you want, but ultimately that was a good offensive line for the Ravens. And Bradley Bozeman at a new position at left guard, and he kind of got picked on at times. And left guard used to be the bane of their existence, even dating back to that Chargers loss. They had James Hurst in there. He got beat up, let up a couple sacks. They put Bozeman in. He can't get it done. So suddenly, you know, fast forward to this year, you've got Ben Cleveland in there. You go get Kevin Zeitler to replace what was a turnstile of Tyree Phillips and DJ Fluker, and you know, Matt Skura had his struggle snapping the ball. Pat McCary, you know, couldn't quite find his footing at times. And Ben Powers comes in and is very hit or miss, high and low, you know, not exactly what they wanted to see out of him, it felt like. Hence the Ben Cleveland pick and how excited they are to put him at left guard. And you go from having more smaller finesse interior offensive linemen aside from Marshall Yanda over the last 2 years. Suddenly you have Kevin Zeitler, behemoth fit guard who, you know, how many guys in the world are there? And I saw this question that was interesting, you know, PFF Fantasy Football, I believe, tweets it out. What's better, you know, what's more important, offensive line or wide receivers? I can't remember how they phrased it, but someone that I like on Twitter said, how many 6'5", 320-pound athletes are there in the world? And the Ravens found two of them to go play interior offensive line. And Ben Cleveland is way bigger than that. Is going to allow the Ravens to run downhill more, which is something that they lacked so much last year. Zeitler is going to be a huge improvement in pass protection. then, you know, it was risky moves. It was risky business at right tackle. You're very uncertain. You're forced to trade Orlando Brown, a very questionable move, and you trade him to the Chiefs. And, you know, you go through the draft, you have the opportunity maybe to go get Tevin Jenkins, and you pass on that. You end up bringing in Alejandro Villanueva, a veteran who was, you know, a borderline franchise left tackle, a Pro Bowl left tackle just a couple of years ago. Now you're moving him to right tackle, and he's a guy who's moved positions quite a few times. He played tight end in college. I mean, he was a freaking Army Ranger. The guy is a hell of an athlete, especially at his size. So I'm confident he'll be able to get that switch done and be successful, more successful than the Tyree Phillips and DJ Flukers of the world. And then they go ahead and go grab Juwan James, a little, you know, flavor saver. It's like sticking a candy bar in the freezer and forgetting about it for 3 months. And then, oh, boom, maybe next year, all of a sudden you have a really good right tackle. Someone who was one of the highest paid linemen in the league prior to a couple of injuries. So a move that doesn't hurt you at all. It doesn't cost very much, and sets it up so that potentially with Villanueva and James, you don't feel as hogtied into being forced to draft or overpay for an offensive lineman on the first wave of free agency or in the first round immediately next year. Would that be a good idea to invest there? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. But you don't feel forced to. And I think that's what Eric DaCosta is all about, is giving himself flexibility at different positions. And I think one of the smartest ways to compose a room like the offensive line, especially, is to try and have a combination of, you know, aged veterans, not necessarily, you know, 38-year-old guys, but some guys that have seen some games and are professionals and can elevate a room and lay an air of professionalism and expectation down upon the room in which they participate in this case, the offensive line room. You also want to mix in some ascending younger players or, you know, second, third, fourth year guys that are fighting for a second contract. And then you want to try and have a rookie or a second year guy that is developmental or someone that you're confident in has potential. And I think that way you get a healthy mix of a pipeline where you have consistency position wide through and through, and having a set veteran, an ascending player, and then a rookie that, you know, you're confident in their ability to develop and your ability to develop them. And I think that's the best recipe for success. And I think we see that right now with Villanueva and James and even Tyree Phillips, who fits the thresholds of the Ravens like when they draft tackles, and it feels like they might want to move him back to tackle after guard maybe wasn't his forte necessarily, or we'll see what happens through training camp. But ultimately, you know, of course, Ronnie Stanley paired in there, and it feels like they've got a good group. And suddenly, you know, Bradley Bozeman moving back to center, who is a, you know, maybe a slightly smaller guard, is suddenly an enormous physical center. So I think they go from having that finesse interior offensive line that they had to avoid running downhill and zone concepts and some inside zone and some duo and things like that. Now suddenly you might be able to stick Ben Cleveland, Bradley Bozeman, Zeitler, and have Villanueva and Stanley as the bookends and be able to go maul some people, especially with Nick Boyle, Pat Ricard, Ben Mason, and, you know, you got some hardcore runners and Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins that can go lay some wood. So suddenly you're talking about a much more physical downhill rushing game, a more diverse rushing attack that can force defenses to have to game plan much more intensely. And the more you force a defense to game plan for, the more mistakes they're going to make. That is a fact. So I think that this is a offensive line that might not be necessarily the most talented when you think back to having a Hall of Famer, an All-Pro, and a Pro Bowler at the same time, but it might be the most balanced and the deepest.
Yeah, I'm excited about what this Ravens offensive line can do in 2021. It's going to be a vast improvement, in my opinion. And I think they'll be able to do a lot of things that they weren't necessarily able to do with the personnel they had in 2020. And that, in turn, will open up their offense. We're going to head into our first break now. And when we return, we'll be talking about the same thing, but on the defensive side of the ball, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. You got all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all of UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their run to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And we are back with our second segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, on the defensive side of the ball, really the only position with major movement for the Ravens was the edge rusher position. It saw them lose three edge rushers in Matthew Judon, Yannick Ngakoue, and Jihad Ward. And to replace them, they turned to the 2021 NFL draft, not 2021 free agency. They drafted Adafi Owe in the first round and Dalen Hayes in the fifth round. Now, guys like Justin Houston and Melvin Ingram are still out there, but it seems like the Ravens are going to trust the guys they re-signed as well in Tyus Bowser and Pernell McPhee, Jalen Ferguson, who is expected by a lot of people to maybe take a big leap in his third season. Those are the guys, a lot of unproven pass rushing talent, but you know, they haven't necessarily had these snaps to prove themselves. So Spencer, looking back on previous Ravens teams with the pass rushers that they have had, how are you feeling about the Ravens pass rushing unit this year?
Well, it's a very different philosophy, it feels like, in terms of cap allocation and draft pick allocation to what the Ravens were doing a few years ago. We think back to 2018 when the Ravens edge rushers, their Sam and their Rush were extremely talented. Judon, Suggs, Za'Darius Smith. I mean, they were stacked at that position and they had a good defense. Ultimately, they, you know, fall short of their goals. Then Terrell Suggs goes elsewhere. Za'Darius Smith goes elsewhere. You've got Judon. You've got Bowser. You've got McPhee. You've got, Ferguson in there. You got Ward in there and a couple others rotating through as well. And they end up trading for Ngakoue over time. And it kind of feels like the Ravens' defensive success has been not necessarily because of their edges over the last 2 years, but their edges have played a part in it, certainly. But they, you know, spend a good bit on Ngakoue, a B-list type of edge in the NFL, a guy who has outstanding production, especially a few years ago, but isn't necessarily the best three-down player. Judon, who is a great Sam backer and someone who can perfect the trifecta of being a Sam backer, stuffing the run and holding down the edge, dropping into coverage with versatility and then rushing the passer, beating up on tight ends and the occasional tackle, but got paid quite a bit. And you feel like Tyus Bowser is a bigger coverage impact player than Judon, someone who can actually cover in man coverage a little bit more, who can cover more ground and be a little bit more adept in almost an off-ball linebacker type way. He showed one of the best spot drops to the flats on a kind of a curl to flat that I've ever seen with a perfect, it was textbook. The way you practice it in practice is exactly how Bowser did it to pick off Baker Mayfield and get a huge interception, nearly scores a touchdown in that Browns thrilling win in primetime. And that was, you know, showing kind of what he can do in coverage. He's able to amass a couple of interceptions over time. And we've definitely seen him with a nice speed rip rush and able to get a little bit of a bull rush going. He's improved as a player who can hold down the edge. And if you want to talk value to contract, I think that Bowser, when considering what Ngakoue got and considering what Judon got, that was the best value for a contract. Is Ngakoue a better pass rusher? Yes. Is Judon maybe a little bit better of a run defender at times and also maybe a slightly more disruptive pass rusher with more size? Yes. But Bowser got, 80, 90, 100% of the production for pennies on the dollar. So I guess dimes on the dollar is more accurate. So Bowser to me is someone who shows what they want. That's more diversity, more coverage ability, more deception, more speed. And then they go get Adafi Owe, who shows speed. And someone that they trust very much so, it appears, as a run defender early in his career. And they think that he has a very high floor there, as well as Pernell McPhee. So taking reps there. The wild card here to me really is Jalen Ferguson. And what are you going to expect out of him this year? Is he someone that you're going to want to be, you know, your third down kind of long, strong edge rusher that can go make plays? He's going to get some opportunities, I think, especially in preseason, then especially maybe in the beginning of the year, because the Ravens want to figure out whether he is ready to be someone that helps them in the long term or not. And I think he's going to get a very fair shot maybe through the first month of the season. And if he fails to make strides and show and flash as a pass rusher and flash as a run defender, then I think we'll see them make another move at the deadline. And then of course, Dalen Hayes, who just feels like a perfect Sam backup to Tyus Bowser, another guy who can cover, who can play the run well, and is just a very balanced Sam type player. And then on that other side. It's just going to be, it's going to be Odafe Oweh. It's going to be Pernell McPhee, and it's going to be Jalen Ferguson. And we're going to see some sub packages. I'm sure McPhee will rotate around and Oweh will be coming on some stunts and some twists and all that good stuff. And Ferguson, I'm sure they'll use on some sub rush stuff inside as well. But ultimately, you don't have a ton of money allocated there. You did spend a first round pick on Odafe Oweh for the first time in a very long time. I mean, darn near 20 years. And so it's looking a lot different. And then you go look at the Ravens interior defensive line. Calais Campbell, one of the more expensive, you know, interior defensive linemen in the league. He does play, you know, a little bit of five tech. He tweeters between that, or I guess he's a tweener between that edge and interior defensive lineman classification, if you will. Then of course, Brandon Williams, one of the highest paid nose tackles in the league. Derek Wolfe, someone that they've paid twice already because they like him so much. Justin Matabuike, someone that the Ravens are very high on, for rightfully so, maybe the player on this defense that I'm most excited about this upcoming season, especially from a potential and from a breakout standpoint. And it seems like the Ravens were really unhappy in retrospect, looking back to the beginning of me answering this question, really unhappy with what they had in Chris Wormley and Michael Pierce and Brandon Williams. And they have turned that into Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell, Derek Wolfe, Justin Matabuike. And there's one, I feel like there's one I'm missing, but regardless, they are going to invest in the interior defensive line a little bit more so. And I think that pays dividends in this Ravens defense, where you do want to be able to blitz from all over, but ultimately you're going to need those interior defensive linemen to be making plays up front. So it feels like a philosophical shift from Ozzie Newsome to Eric DaCosta of focusing more on those interior defensive linemen and getting guys that can actually rush the passer and single gap a little bit more and penetrate and attack and get pressure and bat down passes with length and all that good stuff. So ultimately, it feels like a big paradoxical shift for the Ravens front seven and the way that they want to play football and the amount of attention they want to command and what they want to do. So I think that it was a big transition over the last couple of years in that edge department. But if Jalen Ferguson can't produce, and let's say the Ravens don't end up bringing in Justin Houston, which feels like it's kind of likely to happen, and maybe the next month, but if the Ravens don't bring in one of those guys, then I would be pretty floored to see them watch Jalen Ferguson struggle. You assume that these guys stay healthy. That's probably not going to be the case. And then not go get themselves an edge rusher at the trade deadline. Maybe they feel that there's someone who might be available or a few guys who might be available towards the trade deadline that they can go get. And that's why they've kind of taken this more laxed approach in what they have done in terms of their edge rushers.
Right, and we saw what they did with Yannick Ngakoue in that 2020 trade deadline area. It was a little bit, it wasn't at the trade deadline, but it was in that area where they went out there and they acquired somebody who they thought could help them. And it wasn't like edge rusher was a huge, massive position of need, because it actually created some playing time disparities between Jalen Ferguson and Jihad Ward. But I think that if the Ravens do have a bit of an issue with how their pass rush is kind of going through the first, I don't know, I'll call it the first month of the year, I agree, Spencer, the Ravens could go out there and acquire someone if Houston is available. But if he's not, then where do you go? I think you go to the trade market, as you mentioned. The Ravens, they saw that happen where, for example, the defense wasn't really working out in 2019 at first. You know, it was all right, but they were struggling in a bunch of key areas. And what happens? The Ravens end up signing Josh Bynes and LJ Fort. They end up trading for Marcus Peters. They address that in a very good manner. And I think the same thing could happen in a position of need where if the Ravens deem, you know, oh, we don't have enough pass rushing juice, they'll go out there and they'll do their thing and find somebody who can help this team win. We're going to head into our final break now, and when we return, we'll be talking a bit about RPOs in this Baltimore offense, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be back soon. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors, including coconut, raspberry, salted caramel, strawberry, and German chocolate? Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, but they're healthy too. Order today and get that mint, brownie, or raspberry, or whatever you like. Go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. And we return here with our final segment of this Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher is still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, the Ravens offense is so complex and so unique, but I think a key thing for them is being able to do a lot of different things well. And one of those things is the RPO game, something which I think the Ravens can take advantage of during this 2021 season. Spencer, how do you see the Ravens utilizing RPOs in 2021? And how would you like them to utilize RPOs in 2021?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a misconception, Kevin, and that that would be that people believe that the Ravens are this incredibly RPO heavy team, that, you know, Lamar Jackson has to run an RPO offense and the Ravens, you know, need to use RPOs because Lamar Jackson's limited as a passer. He's this electric runner. So RPO, RPO, RPO. The truth of the matter is that the Ravens pale in comparison in terms of RPO. So in terms of RPO rushing attempts, which includes running backs and quarterbacks, in terms of attempts in 2020, the first player on the Ravens in terms of RPO rushing attempt carries was Gus Edwards. He ranked 55th in the NFL with 10 RPO carries. So only one player on the entire Ravens roster had at least 10 RPO carries. J.K. Dobbins had 7. He was 67th. Lamar Jackson had 7 as well for whopping 12 yards. So I think there's a misconception about RPOs and what they are exactly and how much they're used. Conversely, if you flip over to the read option, which does not involve any passing concept, offensive linemen are not in flux in the ability to you know, for the offense to throw the ball. The Ravens used more than any team in the NFL. The Ravens run the read option and variations of it, and that includes the veer and the bash. It's option runs that don't include a pass play. Lamar Jackson had 75 carries on those. So the large portion of his carries, he was 2nd in the NFL. J.K. Dobbins had 56 of those. He was 3rd in the NFL. Gus Edwards had 44 of them, which was 5th in the NFL. And Mark Ingram had 23 of them and was actually 11th in the NFL, despite being inactive for a bit of the season and kind of stashed away towards the end there. So the misconception is the Ravens are this huge RPO offense. Now we need to flip over to the passing aspect of that. On the RPO passing game, for instance, so Patrick Mahomes was 2nd in the NFL in terms of RPO dropbacks with 61. Aaron Rodgers was 1st with 63. So it's ironic to me that people say, oh, well, you know, the Ravens, they have to run RPOs at a really high volume because Lamar Jackson is this limited passer. Pardon me, Deshaun Watson, or no, I was right. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, then Deshaun Watson. Then actually Ben Roethlisberger was 4th. In RPO usage, Kyler Murray in 5th, 35 for Kyler Murray, up to 63 for Aaron Rodgers. So Lamar Jackson was actually 9th with 27 dropbacks. That accounted for about 5.2% of his dropbacks last year. So RPOs are about 5% of the time. One out of every 20 passes is an RPO. So you look at Patrick Mahomes, 9.2% of his dropbacks are RPOs. Aaron Rodgers, 9.9%. Deshaun Watson, 8.7%. They had great success in those. Great, great, great success in those. Aaron Rodgers, 5 touchdowns on those. Deshaun Watson, 5 touchdowns on those. No interceptions for any of those top three. Patrick Mahomes didn't throw a pick on them. Ultimately, what I'm hinting at is the Ravens need to shy away from the read option a little bit by incorporating more RPOs and threatening pass a little bit more. Now that you have Rashad Bateman, now that you have Sammy Watkins, you know, you can play with Marquise Brown, who does get a good bit of reps in those RPO pass situations when the Ravens do run them. Ultimately, what I'm getting at is throw the ball a little bit more by incorporating those backside slants, those backside curls, you know, some two-man route concepts and RPOs. Allow Lamar Jackson to make a read that way. Number one, that's going to save Lamar Jackson's legs, you know. He's not a spring chicken, but he's still a very youthful football player as he does have a lot of usage on his leg. So it would be ideal, even though he does take good care of himself and generally protects himself going out of bounds or sliding under contact very well. It's just generally smarter to start transitioning towards those RPOs a little bit more than the read option. Of course, you would still want to call it some read option and maintain the threat of Lamar Jackson's legs at times, but you also want to negate him taking so much beating throughout the season. At the same time, you also have Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins who feel like they're ready to have a prolific season. Got Edwards signed to an extension. Dobbins been training his tail off with Dalvin Cook throughout the offseason, and it feels like it is time for those two to carry a little bit more of a load. Third, as I mentioned in the first segment, the Ravens offensive line should be much more proficient in terms of zone blocking, which pairs well with RPOs. as opposed to, you know, the veer or all of those things, a little more complicated to try and run power or man gap RPO concepts. It's a little tricky, can lead to a lot of unblocked pressure and gets a little wonky there. So increasing the zone usage, the zone blocking usage, and then turning up RPOs, I think would be a very effective way for the Ravens to incorporate the whole field a little bit more, to get the passing game going a little bit better, and to ironically, despite what people think, start using RPOs more, like the Chiefs and the Packers and even the Saints and some other teams are. Deshaun Watson, as I mentioned, has had a ton of success on them. So I think that it is time for the Ravens to juice up their RPO usage, contrary to the belief of many that, oh, the Ravens are this RPO offense and that's all they can do. And, Lamar's the same as RG3, who did run a ton of RPOs back in Washington, and yada, yada, yada. We've all heard that before, but ultimately more screen usage, more inside zone and duo concepts, and more RPO usage, as well as, you know, getting a little bit more lethal downfield with three-man route concepts. Those are all ways that I think the Ravens offense can unlock. So maybe shying away from the read option just a little bit, although Lamar Jackson did average 7 yards a carry on the read option, but turning that into some RPO, I think will end up paying dividends in terms of balance and in terms of the ways you threaten defenses ultimately. So that's my tidbit on RPOs versus the read option and how the Ravens can use those in 2021 to move the line.
Yeah, amazing analysis there, Spencer. And that's what it is. They have to be able to move the needle, move the line, as you said, because this offense has so many talented playmakers on it. Now, obviously, Lamar Jackson is the guy that makes it all work. And to be able to put him in those RPO situations, it stresses a defense so much when an offense does that, when RPOs happen. Especially with the way the Ravens can run heavy personnel in there, it's something that defenses can prepare for, but it's a lot harder when, you know, they have receiving threats like Mark Andrews, and they have a threat like Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins and the receivers now that the team has and the better offensive line. It's just all coming together for the Ravens to run a higher percentage of RPOs and to have them really work and stress defenses out and also just stretch them out in general. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show once again. And we really are so close to Ravens training camp. We're getting there, and this 2021 season cannot come soon enough.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. Make sure to give Kevin 5 stars in the iTunes podcast review charts, as well as share this podcast with a friend. Give support to the man who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Thank you so much for having me on. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks so much, Spencer. When we get back here tomorrow, it's our mailbag episode. We'll be diving into our mailbag questions, so stay tuned for that, and I will see you tomorrow.